This is Robin Farmer for this edition of the Writer's Voice for Virginia Voice. And today's guest author is Chris Spezak, whose book, Get a Grip on Your Grammar, 250 Writing and Editing Reminders for the Curious or Confused, was released in April. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you so much for having me, Robin.
With degrees from the College of William and Mary and the University of Richmond, Chris began her career as a college writing instructor. However, after 6 years in the classroom, she transitioned to professional writing and editing. Helping writers sharpen their craft was the driving force behind her book, Get a Grip on Your Grammar, and the creation of her writing program, Grammartopia, which I witnessed and loved. Her work has also been published in the marketing materials of local, regional, and international companies as a column in Richmond Magazine's Our Home and within the archives of the Richmond History Center. In addition, her weekly writing tips blog has been ongoing since 2012. I attended your book launch at Gallery 5, and it was a hoot. You had a playful language-based game show with an all-star panel of contestants. Who knew that learning about grammar could be so much fun? Talk about how the book came about and explain Grammartopia.
Absolutely. Well, I love that Grammartopia program because when we think about grammar, people always want to either fall asleep, like they did perhaps the first time they had those grammar lessons in middle school, or people want to get angry and yell at each other or just really snooty. And that's not what grammar is about. Grammar is about elevating ourselves, about being our absolute best. When we go to business meetings or we go out into the world, we don't always wear flip-flops. I like to think of grammar in the same way. Sometimes we need to step our language up a notch. And that's what this book is all about. I started this blog in 2012, where I was just writing it for myself, for a select group of friends, for some of my business clients, because I realized people were always making the same mistakes over and over. It was more than just few versus less or further versus farther. There were larger confusions, and it wasn't just about semicolons and winky faces. After a number of years and I realized my blog was growing and I was suddenly finding myself on the front page of Google, and my audience about 100 tips in asked me, when is there going to be a book? When is there going to be a book? And it was this great experience. I said, oh, sure, why not? So I experimented a little bit with self-publishing, and I threw out this first ebook, and I just kept going, and I wasn't really thinking about it until all of a sudden I realized this ebook was being used in college classrooms.
Oh, wow.
And I get this phone call from a fairly significant.com, and they wanted to buy out my ebook. And I said, wait a second here. This little fun project of mine apparently has something to it. So that's the point where I actually started looking into a literary agent and a traditional publisher. And that process was kind of the dream story everybody looks for. I had my literary agents in a week and a half. I had a publisher.
Chris, that's fantastic.
Thanks.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
So talk about Grammartopia.
Grammartopia is kind of the wait, don't tell me of grammar. It is an educational but completely entertaining game with panelists who can be 3 panelists to 12 panelists, depending on the environment. And it's laughter and it's fun and it's excitement and the audience is cracking up. And we're learning about grammar, but we're also learning things like there was a boy band who once had their lead singer jump into the audience to correct someone's signage from "you're hot," Y-O-U-R, hot, to "you're hot," adding that apostrophe and the E. Can you guess that boy band?
Harry?
Yeah, good job.
I know. It's Harry's, what are they called?
Harry Styles, One Direction. This is officially the one thing I know about One Direction.
Me too.
Exactly. But grammar can be so much fun. And lay versus lie is a conversation that we can have about whether you're teaching your dog the right command. What do you think? Should you tell your dog to lay down or lie down?
What's the answer?
Lie down. Everyone tells your dog to lay down, but come on, people, it's time to step it up a notch.
Funny. So who can participate in Grammartopia? What's the age range?
Oh, great. Grammartopia is a program that's pretty flexible. It can be anything from middle schoolers to college students to adults. It's something that I'm doing with the business community of Chesterfield County upcoming in the fall here. And it's also something that I'm doing at the Durham County Library in North Carolina this fall. Both of those are adult events, but I also have a number of school events, both middle school and high school, coming up here across the state of Virginia.
And the demand for it is growing outside of RVA because right. You got a request in Atlanta, right?
I got a request in from Atlanta this morning, actually.
You had another program at the Richmond Public Library that I attended, and you had several local wordsmiths talking about the power of words and storytelling. And I couldn't help but think, as a society, do we still value good grammar? Because you see, bad grammar, it's so prevalent, right? What are your thoughts on that?
It's absolutely true. And there are a couple different ways we can think about it. You can think that in this moment in history, we're actually writing more than ever before, because people who wouldn't always be doing their writing past their notes that they passed in high school, all of a sudden are on social media and writing all over the place. So in one side of things, it's amazing. We are all writers in this day and age. But the other side of it, because we're all writers in this day and age, people don't always take the time to get it right, to read over their words before they press post, before they press publish, before they connect with each other. And this is where we're getting sloppy. And really, this is where my blog, my book, my Grammartopia program all came out of, that moment of a lot of things are slacking. And I think words does not have to be one of them.
I like how you describe, we don't have to wear flip-flops. I love that.
People wear flip-flops. There's right? casual wear and there's elevating ourselves in a boardroom. What are you walking in wearing? And you think need to think about your communications the same way. When you are writing that email to your boss, when you're writing that cover letter, that resume, how do you want to present yourself? And flip-flops is not always the answer.
Your book has received some really good reviews, and I especially like this one. I know about as much about grammar as I do about kite surfing. But Chris Spezak's delightful, breezy take has dark powers that give a rookie like me fingers instead of left thumbs, light instead of fog. Do us a favor and read us some excerpts from your wonderful book.
I'd be happy to. All right. We live in a fast-paced time, but that's no excuse for typing drunkenly across keyboards. Sometimes we know the rules and abandon them. Sometimes we err because we don't know any better. Consider this your call to action. No more excuses. Use your words precisely. It's my challenge to you. All right, I'm going to just dive in. I think I'm going to read two tips for you here just to give you a bit of a teaser.
Sounds good.
This is writing tip number 17, aloud versus out loud. LOL, laughing out loud, may be ubiquitous these days, but why not LA, laughing aloud? Is there a difference? It's shorter, and we love shorter in this era of texts and Twitter. So was it just the city of Los Angeles that held it back? Here's the nitty-gritty on these two words. The original form, which dates back to the 13th century, is aloud. But in the early 1800s, out loud appeared as a colloquialism. Why? Who knows? But in our day of totes, forevs, and awesome sauce, we can understand weird things happening with language. Most consider aloud and out loud synonyms, though the diehards might reserve the original aloud for formal writing and out loud for casual conversation. LOL, then, seems to follow this train of thought. It's definitely an acronym designed for casual use. So we can't blame Los Angeles for the appearance of LOL rather than LA, can we? Who knew text speak considered grammar rules?
That's cute.
Thanks, and I'll give you one more. Here's writing tip number 95. Make do, D-O, versus make do, D-U-E. I think there might be a librarian at my local library who has magical calendar powers. She seems to make my books do sooner than I thought they were. However, outside of this wizardry, make do, D-U-E, never makes sense. Got it? The original expression is make do, D-O. I know, I hear the bafflement as you're throwing up your arms. How can these two verbs sit side by side like this and still make sense? Well, they simply do. To do means to make something do well enough. It means for something to be used as a perhaps lesser substitute, or sometimes it's used synonymously with makeshift. Although you should watch out for your own librarian with make-do powers, D-U-E, do try to remember the correct form of this one and use D-O accordingly.
So that was tip number 95. How many tips are in your book?
There are 250 tips in my book, and it's broken down into five different sections. The first section, which is the media section of it, is all about word usage. All of these confusions between the lay versus lie, affect, effect, insure, insure. But I get into a lot of really fun ones there between grizzly and grisly and all over the place. After that, though, we go through business writing etiquette, storytelling, idioms, and punctuation.
So, Chris, how long did it take you to write this book?
That's a really funny question because this book came out of my blog, and this blog started back in 2012, and the book itself, I signed my deal with my publisher when I was about on blog number 175.
Wow.
Now, admittedly, those 175 blogs did not all go into the book. There's some really funny stories there about which ones were the more controversial items that were taken out of this book. For example, the Oxford versus serial comma debate was too intense to put into this book. Oh my goodness, that made me laugh really hard. But you know what? I understand it. After that, we kind of wean through which ones made sense, which ones, okay, am I going a little bit too far on, that they're a little bit too discreet about emulate versus emulate, that kind of things. Okay, that might be not in the top 250. So we played with that a lot. But then after I had my book deal, we ended up pulling together the last 150 in about 3 months.
Wow.
Right.
So let's switch gears and talk about your journey as a writer.
Sure.
When did you know that you wanted to be a writer?
Oh, when does anyone know they're going to be a writer? Somewhere between fourth grade, when I read Where the Red Fern Grows, which was the first book that made me cry. Somewhere between sixth grade, when I read Lois Lowry's The Giver, and I realized that words can make you reimagine the world that you live in. And somewhere between my senior year of high school, when I was writing a lot for fun, and I suddenly won a creative writing award, when I was planning to go into pediatrics. And that whole idea of a college biology English double major was a terrible idea anyway. Somewhere in that mix, I realized this is where my passion was, and this is where I needed to be.
Talk about how the writing community here helped you.
I was planning on leaving Richmond. I came here for University of Richmond Graduate School. I was planning on being here for 2 years and then moving on to some other more cultured city than Richmond, Virginia. And I'd laugh at myself when I say that now because I am in love with Richmond.
Richmond's hot.
Richmond is. We have an amazing music scene, art scene, literary scene. And when I first stumbled into James River Writers, I was hooked. I was in graduate school and had no money in the world, and I was volunteering at James River Writers events, and I consider James River Writers kind of my MFA in writing, because if you go to enough of the events between the craft panels and the business panels and their amazing annual conference, 15th this year, that just teaches you so much. And then, of course, you have the community who is cheering you on and inspiring you every step of the way. Oh, my goodness. That is why I'm here.
What's your advice to aspiring writers?
Meet other writers. Spend time with other writers. And as silly as it sounds, obviously, you're putting words on the page and you need to practice, practice, practice. Read. Don't forget to read. When I started writing, I had a love of the classics. And I was reading so much Victorian writing, and I was reading so much of The Lost Generation. But I didn't have my finger on the pulse of what literature is today. And I think when I started really diving into the reading of contemporary literature across so many different genres, that upped my writing game so much.
So I know you're working on some other projects. What's next for you?
Next, I'm taking a little diversion away from grammar, and I'm playing a little bit more with fiction. I have my first novel that I'm hoping to have in a place ready to pitch come this fall. But you know what the funny thing is with an editor? Editors love to edit, and it's really hard to step away. So I'm in that place right now where my draft is done, my story structure is finalized, my characters are nice and meaty. But now I'm just playing with the sentence level stuff of just making every single letter and word count.
How many drafts have you done, you think?
That's a good question. Technically, you could say I'm on draft 3, but there's been so much change here, change there, that it's, you could also say it was draft 100.
Chris, thank you for stopping by the Writer's Voice. It's been a pleasure.
Robin, thank you so much.